are no typical murderers. Some plan their crimes meticulously, while others kill on impulse.
It's Jason Voorhees.
Fred Krueger, Mother. Fred Krueger!
It is time, Michael.
When there is no more room in hell.
Well, a boy's best friend is his mother.
The dead.
What's your favorite scary movie?
We'll walk the earth.
I'm eternal, child. I am the eater of...
No tears, please. It's a waste of good suffering.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
The boogeyman is real.
Here's Johnny.
The blackest eyes.
Every year.
The devil's eyes.
Don't fall asleep.
It's got a death curse.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of Death Curse Radio. I'm your host, Nathan Barker, and joining me tonight are co-anchors Kent Mullins.
Hey, what's up, guys?
And Jesse Gilbert.
Hey.
Now, for tonight's episode, with the recent passing of movie icon R. Lee Ermey, a.k.a. Gunnery Sergeant Hartman, your senior drill instructor from Full Metal Jacket, a.k.a. Sheriff Hoyt from the Texas Chainsaw remake and The Beginning, a.k.a. the coach from one of my favorite films, Saving Silverman, and the list, of course, goes on and on and on. So tonight, we pay tribute to the man and legend, R. Lee Ermey, R.I.P. Basically, we will just be discussing our thoughts and paying our respects to such an iconic actor. Gone at 74, from what I understand was complications from pneumonia, and I had no idea that he was battling any illness, and I was definitely shocked to hear of his passing. Now, R. Lee had so many roles over the years, but for me, when I think of him, I think of the three roles that I already mentioned, and I mean, he fucking nailed all of them. And I don't think they could have picked a better actor. I mean, no way, no how. I mean, he's just that badass of an actor. And he is just the definition of serious. I mean, fucking seriously. I mean, when you think of a serious actor, that guy has to be right on your list. I mean, he fucking nails everything that he does. And he's been picked for so many serious type of roles over the years. I mean, there's a reason for that. And unfortunately, I never had the chance to shake the man's hand. He was one that I always wanted to meet. And I do have an autographed 8x10 of him from Full Metal Jacket that I actually purchased off his website many years ago. And it will always have its place in my collection. Now, Kent, you are a former Marine, Semper Fi, of course, Semper Fi, do or die. Now, during your time in the service, did you ever have any chance or have any encounters with him at any military functions, or have you ever had the chance to chat with him at any other convention or just anything in general?
I unfortunately never got to actually, you know, have a dialogue with him, but in 2010, he was at our Marine Corps ball, which he was pretty... That wasn't uncommon for him. You know, every unit in the Marine Corps has the Marine Corps ball. And it was pretty common for him to show up to those. I unfortunately never got to meet him. And even if I had, it wouldn't have been the same environment as if it had been in a convention or something, because he's there as a Marine. He would have been in dress blues. And I was in dress blues, and I was just a Lance Corporal at the time. So I wasn't, you know, very high ranking at that point in my career. And he was a gunnery sergeant. So even if I'm kind of glad I didn't get to meet him there, because it wouldn't have been the same as if I had come across him at a convention. It would have been a Lance Corporal talking to a gunnery sergeant and not Kent Mullins talking to R. Lee Ermey at a convention. So the dynamic would have been completely different. That being said, I had many Marine friends that had met him, you know, and it not be in that situation, or it being a more laxed environment where uniforms weren't involved and all that stuff. And I've never heard a bad thing said about the man. And, you know, celebrity deaths, I'm not going to say they don't bother me, but at the end of the day, you don't know these people when celebrities die. And when people say, you know, like they're shaking and they can't leave their house and they're just going to be crying, like I've never I can't relate to that with any celebrity death. But in terms of celebrity deaths, I think Arlie Ermey's passing bothered me more than anybody probably since Robin Williams. I fucking loved Arlie Ermey, man. I loved everything he ever did. I think he's been phenomenal in every role he ever played. I loved him as a person from, you know, you don't never really know somebody as a person, I guess, but from what I could tell as a person and everything, he was in three of probably my favorite movies ever, which are, of course, Full Metal Jacket. That's half the reason I ended up in the Marine Corps, and then Life with Eddie Murphy, and a movie you'll hear me mention probably 10 million times in the lifespan of this podcast, The Frighteners with Michael J. Fox. I love The Frighteners so much. I have posters and the Blu-ray and everything. And I don't know why people don't like that movie. I don't feel like it got the recognition that it deserves, but I'm probably the biggest Frighteners fan ever. But that being said, Arlie Ermey was in it and he was in Full Metal Jacket. You know, if you ask people to recall their memory of the movie Full Metal Jacket, they're probably just going to remember the boot camp scene, the first 30 minutes of the film, because that's the most iconic part of the film. Most people turn it off after boot camp, and that's because of Arlie Ermey. And then Life with Eddie Murphy and Martin Lawrence. It's one of my favorite comedies. And then, of course, this being a horror podcast, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Now, Sheriff Hoyt is, with the exception of Chop Top, my favorite character in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre franchise. And then also, of course, he's been in everything, man. He was in everything. He worked with everybody. He was in Apocalypse Now, which is another iconic, you know, film. And then you got Family Guy, and then television shows. He was in every television show: X-Files, Family Guy, The Simpsons. He's just been a role in every facet of pop culture that I love. Every facet, every television, movies, video, even video games. He was in Fallout. Fallout is one of my favorite video game series. And then Call of Duty, he's done voice work for both of those games. He's just, it really bothered me, man. Whenever I found out he died, not just for the acting, for the fact that he was one of my favorite actors, but you know, the Marine Brotherhood and all that stuff is a thing. And it bothered me on many levels. And like you said, Nathan, I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that it was so unexpected. Nobody knew that he was even sick, which pneumonia is a fairly, you know, fast acting thing. We found out with Ralphie May just a few months back, it took him too. One minute it seems like they're here and the next they're gone, and that's how pneumonia works. But yeah, man, it bothered me whenever I found out Mr. Ermey had left us.
And rightfully so. I was definitely shocked because this guy was fucking serious. So you would expect to maybe hear, I mean, just hypothetically, like maybe he was accidentally shot at a gun range. I mean, he was a spokesman for Glock pistols. And of course, with his History Channel TV shows, Locked and Loaded, and I believe it was Mail Call, you would think that there would be some kind of accident or something like that. I mean, this guy, like, eight fucking nails. Like, this guy was the definition of seriousness and toughness and Vietnam era and just everything that he's been through. You would think that if he was going to go suddenly, that it would have been maybe from an accident. I mean, maybe I'm wrong in thinking that, but as tough as this guy was and as serious of an actor as he was, I mean, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, not that pneumonia is not serious. I'm not downplaying that by any means, but considering 74 and everything that he's been through and all the things that he was involved in, I would have been, you know, more, I guess, on the lines of thinking that if he was going to die at that age, it would have been maybe from an accidental death.
You would think that, you know, when Arlie Ermey goes out, it's going to be in hellfire, or he's been devoured by a pack of grizzly bears, because one wouldn't be able to take Arlie out. You know, you think it would have,
right?
You would think it would be something like that, because that's the thing, man, is Ermey wasn't playing a character. in a lot of the movies, that's who he fucking was. You know, he was maybe more, you know, good-hearted than some of the characters he portrayed, but that the hardness isn't fake. That hardness was 100% real. He wasn't acting when it came to that part of the characters that he played.
And with that being said, that's kind of why I was curious about possible encounters with him. Is you're right. I mean, some things you just don't fake. And with all of his roles and all of them being very similar, and him portraying a person of authority in a lot of films or TV shows, I don't think he really had to try to portray it. I mean, that was just him. He was just an authoritative type of person, just a very unique individual. And all of his work speaks for itself. I mean, I loved the Texas Chainsaw, the 2003 film, and of course the beginning later on, but I honestly don't think they could have found a better person. I mean, especially in the 2003 film, in that early scene when they're in the van about to wrap up the body, and just his demeanor and just the seriousness. I mean, he's fucking scary. I mean, that is some serious shit, and that's not something that you can learn to portray. I think that shows that he's just that type of person. He can just lay it out like that.
It's in the eyes. For me, it was always in the eyes. He had the most intense, burning eyes. Like, he could just see right through your soul. And, you know, I went to boot camp at Paris Island, which is where the boot camp scene in Full Metal Jacket took place. And it's not hard for me to imagine standing there at attention and having to look at those eyes slightly being covered by the brim of that Smokey the Bear hat. Like I said, I'm glad that I didn't get to meet him at the Marine Corps ball, because the dynamic would have been completely different.
Well, hang on, though. Let's think about that, though. Just from me not having any knowledge about that, let's say that you happen to slide up to the bar, grabbing a drink, whatever, you're standing next to each other. What would that dialogue have been like if you were standing next to each other and even had a chance to even acknowledge him? How would that have played out?
It would depend. Man, the balls were really interesting. They were a lot of fun to go to. You only have them once a year. The way the balls usually work, and this is with any higher ranking individual, like be it a first sergeant, a gunnery sergeant like Arleigh Ermey was, master sergeant. If I had approached him early in the night, and this is just me going off of how it would be for any higher ranking Marine, early in the night, first getting there, it is business as usual. It is, you speak to them with respect. You speak to them at, you know, nothing is different. But it seemed as the night went on, and, you know, because the ball is to, you're there for fun. It's to unwind. The drinks start pouring, and people start getting tipsy and drunk. And then, you know, after a while, they do a big ball, a banquet thing, and you have dinner. But later on in the night, you know, the music starts playing, and they open up a dance floor, and people have their wives there, and everything kind of unwinds. So that would have completely depended on what point in the night I approached him. If I had approached him early in the night, it's probably still would have been cool, but there's that uncomfortable aspect there of a Lance Corporal talking to a gunnery sergeant. But, you know, later on in the night, if I'd waited till like midnight, everybody's drinking and everybody starts unwinding, it probably wouldn't have been that much different than if we were at a convention. And, you know, those balls are so big that I don't even know if I saw him, but I never even, like, that was at a point in my life when I wasn't in depth into the depth of this hobby as I am now. I was just an avid horror movie watcher. I'd never been to a convention. I wasn't collecting figures or autographs and making masks. That was even before the mask making thing. So I don't know that it was that big of a deal to even meet him at that point. It's gotten more important to me over the last couple years. But yeah, man, how that conversation would have went would have been depended completely on at what point in the night that I approached him.
And that's totally understandable. But I mean, hypothetically, let's just think of it like this. It is midnight. Everybody's been drinking, whatever. If you were a fan at that point in time, if you would have been in arm's reach of him or standing shoulder to shoulder at the bar and just, you know, let him know, hey, I love your work. I'm a big fan, and stuck out a hand for a handshake. Would that have been, you know, an inappropriate thing to do at that time?
Absolutely not. No. Let's say it's midnight. And I see at this point, you know, to me, Gunnery Sergeant Ermey, I could have. It probably would have went along the lines of, "Hey, how you doing, Gunnery Sergeant? I'm Lance Corporal Mullins. Loved your work in, because I was a Lance Corporal at the time. I loved your work in Texas Chainsaw Massacre and the Frighteners is probably one of my favorite horror comedy. It is my favorite horror comedy of all time." And then I would have probably done what I did pretty commonly and early on in this hobby when I've met celebrities is started babbling and acting like an idiot because I get nervous and choked up. But, I like to think that he probably would have, despite the fact that we were both standing there in dress blues and the rank is showing, I like to think that from what I've been told by other Marines that met him, I'm almost certain that he would have not dropped who he is, but let it down a little bit and just talk to me man to man and not Lance Corporal to Gunnery Sergeant. Just because from what I've been told by not only just the Marines that I know that met him, but, you know, horror movie fans that met him at conventions and stuff. He was an amazing individual. I know that he was a stern man, but he also had a fucking amazing sense of humor, man. He was really funny. And if you've ever listened, he did a podcast that I listened to a while back, and he was just a really funny guy, man. And yeah, I think that if I had approached him later on in the night, it would have been more of man to man talking with me still being respectful, but more comfortable than had I approached him early in the night.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you just have to be there. I mean, hell, who knows? He could have liked you. You could have went over to his house and fucked his sister.
I probably would have shit myself if he said that to me, and then a first sergeant standing nearby would have told me to fuck off. But yeah.
I mean, you just have to throw a little movie humor in there, right? I mean, come on.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I just wish I would have had the opportunity to meet him. And even though I know we're saying that in that situation, it probably would have been cool later on in the night, but I still would have rather it had been at a convention, him in civilian clothes and me out of the Marine Corps. I would have preferred it been under those circumstances.
Oh, understandable. I mean, he did so many appearances, I mean, with his Glock affiliation and all the gun shows and all the NRA stuff. Of course, horror conventions, he wasn't a big staple at, as you guys know. And, of course, the military functions, I wasn't involved in that. So I'm not really sure what his involvement was or appearances were. I mean, obviously, you said that he's made a lot of appearances at the balls. But, I mean, everybody seems to say the same thing that I've talked to, just kind of like what you're saying. I mean, what you've seen on screen is just kind of what you're going to get in real life. And I just really respect that. So now, Jesse, we haven't heard from you yet. So Kent and I have been babbling and so on and so forth. So did you ever have the chance to shake the man's hand or have any conversations with him?
Oddly enough, a couple times.
Oh, very nice.
Not at a horror convention, though. There is a very famous gun and knife show in Dayton. There used to be called Bill Goodman's Gun and Knife Show, and it took place at Hare Arena like every year. My family, like starting out for like back in the 80s, has always worked at Hare Arena. So a number of different times he made appearances over the years. I probably met him maybe 10 or more times because by the time I started working there, one of the things that I had to do was go for special guests, like for bands, wrestlers, things like that. And I always ended up getting on that detail because, you know, you got to meet people. So, yeah, a number of times I got to shake his hand, talk to him about some of his movies. I'm a huge cartoon buff. So at the time, you know, I talked to him about, you know, his early work, like the movie Toy Soldiers, of course, was the first time that I recognized who he was as a kid. But he had done so many like Nickelodeon cartoons, just cartoons, like just in weird appearances, but it was always as a drill sergeant or some sort of sergeant in some way or another. So like he was just really nice, very kind to everyone. He was actually pretty soft-spoken for the most part, except for like when he would fuck with someone or like deliver some of his lines, you know, he'd get loud like he does in the movies and stuff. But he overall was probably one of the nicest people and the kindest people that I have ever met. I agree with the Frighteners, what Kent was saying earlier. Frighteners is also one of my favorite movies. The fact that he was in Frighteners just made me love Frighteners even more. I really disagree with everything you guys are saying. Like all his appearances, the man is just fantastic.
And mentioning the Frighteners a couple times, Kent's mentioned it, you've mentioned it. I'm going to go ahead and throw that out. I enjoy that film, and spoiler alert, we're going to definitely fucking chop it up about the Frighteners later on. But yeah, I mean, he was just in so much shit. I mean, it's just a matter of opinion. I mean, like Saving Silverman, for example, that's just a fucking funny movie. Jack Black, I mean, come on. I mean, it's just a great fucking movie, and he plays an awesome coach role in that. So much good comedy, but it's serious comedy on his end. Like, he's not even really, like, trying to fucking be funny. It just works out in that manner. So I think they really picked the best candidate that they could for that coach position. But, I mean, obviously, Full Metal Jacket, it is what it is. I wasn't in the military, so I don't have anything to contribute as far as Kent does in his service, which we appreciate his service, and that goes without being said. But for me, when I think of R. Lee, I think of, regardless of, I mean, I know he has a ton of serious roles and a ton of TV credits and everything, but when I think of him, he's, you know, he's Sheriff Hoyt. He's the coach from Saving Silverman. And I just, with that 2003 Texas Chainsaw film, I mean, holy shit. I mean, you know, Andrew was great as Leatherface and the cast was great. And I really enjoyed that film, and we'll definitely fucking chop it up about that later. But R. Lee was, to me, like basically the highlight of that. I mean, he made that fucking character, and I don't know how you guys feel or what your experiences are with out of the area, you know, out in the middle of nowhere sheriff's departments, but that's how that shit was back in the day. I mean, so he like made that shit believable. I mean, you might have, when you're out in the middle of nowhere like that, I mean, sometimes it's just, it's street justice or just the crazy things happen. They get covered up, and it's kind of fucking believable when you think about the time period. So I think he portrayed that character, I mean, to the fucking T for what Marcus Nispel was trying to get across. I don't think he could have picked a better person. And he definitely has my vote with Sheriff Hoyt. I mean, he's going to be a horror icon for that right there, just for the TCM aspect. Now, yeah, he was in some other films, but you got to admit, I mean, as far as Sheriff Hoyt, who the fuck else could have done a better job than him? Kent, I'll let you start with that name. If you can think of somebody that could have done a better job, I'd definitely like to hear who that would be.
There is nobody. And I'm not, I honest to God believe that, and I know you do too, that could have played that role the way that he did.
Nobody.
Sheriff Hoyt is the reason that I continue to watch those two Texas Chainsaw movies to this day. That he's what keeps me watching. If that character wasn't in those movies, or if it was played by anybody else, literally anybody else, I would have hated those movies 10 times more than I don't hate those movies at all, but I think I would have felt a lot different about those films. Andrew Bernarski can suck his own dick and all he wants and you know, take credit for how good those movies are or aren't, but they are as good as they are because of R. Lee Ermey, because he was fucking amazing in them. He was so good. And like you said, another one of my favorite scenes in those is that same scene that you were talking about where they're in the van and taking care of the body. And he's just so cold, and nobody could do cold like him, man. Nobody could.
Absolute perfection. No doubt.
Yeah. that character that I would have watched. I'm not saying that they should have done this, but I would have, without even thinking, watched a movie focused solely on his character alone and Leatherface not even have been involved. That's how good that character was.
Oh, absolutely. And the cast was great. I mean, obviously you have Jessica Biel bouncing around a tank top. Okay, that's fine, whatever. But that's not what made the fucking movie. I mean, you're right. I mean, that character to me, like I said, I think Andrew B did a great job as Leatherface, and maybe one day we'll have him on the show and we can talk about it. But I think that Arlize character was the highlight of that. I mean, that shit was fucking serious. Everything about it was fucking serious. And I've actually had conversations with Marcus Nispel on my other show, the Return to Camp Blood podcast. And if you want to listen to that episode, you can, you know, go to campbloodpodcast.com and pull up the episode with Marcus Nispel. But one of my favorite lines is when they leave the van and he yells out, you know, get that nasty goddamn thing out of the back of my car and put it in the trunk. I mean, that's just one of my favorite parts of the movie. And I got to actually say that with Marcus Nispel. I mean, so that's like a highlight for me, of course, to be able to tell him that, you know, that's like my like favorite part of the movie is that one little line, because I think it's fucking hilarious. Like, don't put the saran wrapped body in the back of my squad, put it in the trunk. I think that shit's fucking hilarious. But yeah, I mean, everything that he did, I mean, the seriousness when they're sitting in the back of the van, I mean, I'm trying to think of another movie where there's something that serious going on. I'm sure there's a ton of other movies, but when you think of like holy shit moments, I mean, they just fucking nailed it on that.
And I think a testament to how good he was, and I think it's pretty common knowledge about how hard Stanley Kubrick was to work with. Case in point, Shelley Duvall. I'm not entirely convinced that Stanley Kubrick didn't drive Shelley to the point that she's at today. But and I love Stanley Kubrick too. I don't think he did a movie that I'm not extremely fond of. But it's no secret that he was hard to work with, and they would do, you know, any take that you're going to do that you would have done with Stanley Kubrick is going to be 30 times. And with Arlie Ermey, while they were filming Full Metal Jacket, Stanley Kubrick himself said that every single take that Arlie Ermey did, they did a maximum of 3 to 4 times. That's right, all that right. It took. And he also let Arlie, you know, all that stuff is ad-libbed.
Yeah. He gave him full range for improv on anything that he saw fit.
Which is another thing that is unheard of from Stanley Kubrick. He never let anybody do that. And to let him ad-lib and on top of that only have to do 3 takes, I think that says a lot about how talented he was.
Oh, absolutely. And his original role in Full Metal Jacket was as an advisor, as you guys are probably well aware. And then, of course, him seeing videos for instruction on how the DIs should be, then Stanley's like, oh, shit, you know, he should be in that role. And then, of course, gave him free range to do what he wanted. And obviously it fucking worked, because like you said earlier, when you watch that movie, it's basically over after the basic training scenes, because after that, I mean, yeah, there's, you know, it's entertaining, there's some good spots here and there, but for the most part, the first half of that movie makes the fucking movie. I won't turn it off if it's playing when they roll past that, but there are some down spots in there. But I mean, overall, the movie's fucking awesome. But yeah, I mean, I don't think you could have found a better person. I mean, I can just imagine Stanley watching some of these tapes as far as him trying to give instruction, and just the look on his face, like, holy shit, this guy's fucking serious. Like, I'm going to cast him in the movie. I mean, that's, I think it speaks for itself.
And, you know, which he got his start as a drill instructor in a movie called The Boys in Company C, I believe was the name of that movie. It's another Marine Corps movie where a lot of it's in boot camp. It's a really good, not as good as Full Metal Jacket, but it's really good. But, you know, and I'm sure a lot of people know this, but the reason he was so good in those is because he was a drill instructor at Parris Island. That's what he did for a long time while he was in the Marine Corps. And I don't need to just go on about his Marine Corps career. That's just, you know, that's special to me. But, yeah, going back to Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Sheriff Hoyt made those movies. As far as I was concerned, those two new Texas Chainsaw Massacre movies weren't about Leatherface. For me, they were about Sheriff Hoyt. And another scene where I think he's phenomenal in those movies is where he's got the two boys strung up in that little shed, and he's knocking them around and suffocating one of them with the bag.
And oh, yeah.
He cuts one of them loose and says that if he can do, I believe it's 10 push-ups, he'll let him free.
Right.
I love that scene, man. He was so good. He was just so good. I don't mean to like keep ghosting Jesse here. Do you have anything to add to this, Jesse?
Yeah, you were on a roll, man. I didn't want to cut in on you. I love him as Hoyt, honestly. That was probably, I paid more attention to him than Leatherface in both of those movies. And I mean, I'm a huge Texas Chainsaw fan. I know it's my fiance's favorite series, so we watch it often. But every time we get to those points, like you said earlier, that part where he is making them move the body was probably, in my opinion, the most fucked up thing he did the entire movie. And I loved it. No one could have played that role. Not with that conviction, not with that presence. Anyone else would have been weaker. Like, you would have maybe disbelieved, what are you really going to do if I don't move this body? But you can just look at him and tell that he's probably going to just kill you if you don't do it. And that is scary as shit to me.
Absolutely. And think about this, though, that at the time of that filming, and of course now it would be totally different, but he had the age lines. He had that weathered look. He had that old school fucking way out in the middle of nowhere county sheriff fucking look. And add that on top of, and if you guys have ever been down south and seen how some of the sheriff's departments, what their uniforms like, I mean, especially at that time with like the pull on boots and the sheriff's hat and have, you know, carrying a revolver and just everything was so well done, especially for the time frame that they were trying to portray in 2003. When we first seen him step out into that role, it was like, wow. I mean, that shit's fucking serious. And I'm trying to think right now, I mean, of another person that could even remotely even come close to that. And of course, we could throw some names out there, and there's probably somebody who could have, you know, did that role okay. But I mean, I just really think that they fucking nailed it with him. I really can't even think of somebody who would even be even near on that level.
You know, another thing that makes me sad about his passing is the fact that I don't feel like we really got to see, we did get glimpses of his range as an actor. I know that most of his roles were as an authoritarian figure, be it a drill instructor or a police officer or somebody like what he was in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but he was also really funny, man. He was a funny fucking dude, and he showed that in Saving Silverman. You know,
absolutely. And it's funny that you mentioned that, because I was going to say the same thing. Is he's very serious in that film, but he also has range, and him and Jack Black just paired fucking absolutely perfect together.
And it was so funny seeing him not take himself seriously in roles like that, you know, where I haven't seen Saving Silverman in a long time, but I do. But I think it says something that the only thing that's, and maybe I'll have to revisit it, Nathan, seeing how highly you talk of it. But because I really like Jason Biggs, but the only thing that stands out in my mind in that entire movie is Arlie Ermey. I loved seeing him not take himself that seriously, even though he's playing a serious character in the movie. And just like in The Frighteners, yeah, it's a serious character, but it's in a comedy and it's meant to be funny. And that aspect made it hilarious to me. And I feel like this is going to be an ongoing thing throughout this podcast. I'll always try to bring everything back to The Frighteners, but you know, him shifting into the boxing gloves and he punches Michael J. Fox, and then he shifts into, he's wearing a flak jacket and he's dual wielding M60s. He was amazing, man. And I even though he always played serious characters, I would have liked to have seen him portray maybe a character that wasn't so stern, and wasn't so, you know, cold, because I really believe that he could have done that extremely well. And maybe he has done it, and I just haven't seen that movie yet. But I think that his range is extremely underrated.
Yeah, and you're probably right. And I wouldn't say that he's necessarily typecasted into the, you know, authoritative role or whatever. I mean, he obviously does have some range, but like with Saving Silverman, he was serious, but it was funny as fuck. I mean, especially when he's out in front of their house and he's like, you know, you boys got any teepee? And they're like, no, we're trying to cut back on the water bill. And he's like, that's all right, I'll find something. I mean, how fucking funny is that to see Arlie Ermey reaching the mailbox for something to wipe his ass with? I mean, that shit's fucking hilarious. But just everything about him in that movie, I mean, they just fucking nailed it, plain and simple. And that's back in shit. I mean, that was, what, 2002? So now we're like 16 years ago. I mean, yeah, I mean, just a great, great addition to his resume. I mean, it just shows that he can be funny even when he's serious. And that's what's awesome about it. Even, you know, Full Metal Jacket, it's funny. It's serious, but it's fucking funny. But when you're like a person like yourself, Kent, and you've been through boot camp, you've had a DI in your face, and you watch that film, and then of course you see Saving Silverman and you see the variations there. I mean, you can respect the range there, I'm sure.
You know, while you were talking there, I had an epiphany. I was talking about, it's sad that we didn't get to see his range, and while you were mentioning boot camp and all that stuff, I started thinking about The Boys in Company C, which was his first movie. And he also played a drill instructor in it and at Paris Island in the Marine Corps. But I just realized, I don't know if you guys have seen that movie, but he plays, at the end of the day, it's a drill instructor role, but you see a lot more of him as a person in that movie. It's the drill instructor he plays in that one isn't like the, you know, Gunny Hartman in Full Metal Jacket. It's more of a, there are scenes in that movie where you see him speaking to people man to man, and you do see him show emotions and not just anger and sternness. And, I'm thinking back to that man, and there's some amazing scenes in that where he's speaking to, recruits, one-on-one, which isn't very, you know, and being going through boot camp, that's not realistic, but for that movie's sake, it was really good. And he was really good in it. And I would use that movie as an example to how he was an actor. He can show more than anger. And, if you guys haven't seen that, I strongly, strongly recommend it. It's an older film, but it's really good. And if you liked him in Full Metal Jacket, you know, he's not playing the same drill instructor personality, but he is a drill instructor. It's just a little bit more chill drill instructor, but still a drill instructor. But to see Arlie Ermey really show off his acting chops and show something that isn't just anger and yelling, and even though he was amazing at that, you should watch that movie just to see how good he really was.
Well, his obvious real life experiences definitely transpired into his iconic acting roles. I mean, that goes without being said, obviously. And there's very few actors that can actually play that out throughout the course of a career. And I think he was one of the iconic ones who actually was able to do that, whether it was on a mainstream TV show or an iconic movie or whatever. And it's not necessarily that he was typecasted for that like some other roles, but that's just what people came to expect from him. And I think that it just worked out well in his career and made him the icon that it is. So with that being said, I mean, final thoughts on his career. Kent, with your military connection, I'm going to let you go first. I mean, just final thoughts in general and on his legacy as a whole.
Well, this isn't a show, you know, one last thing, and then I'll wrap it up as far as for what I have to say. And this goes to him as a man and not as an actor, as a person, as a human being. I know we don't go into politics and everything on this show, but it's no secret. It's not hidden that Hollywood is extremely left leaning and liberal, and that's fine. I'm a libertarian, so I have liberal and conservative views on certain things. But it's also no secret that Arlie Ermey was a conservative. Aside from the fact that, you know, he was open about the fact that he voted for Obama in 2008. But he had the ballsack to be open about the fact that he was a conservative in liberal Hollywood. And that he believed that that's what eventually got him blacklisted from Hollywood was his political leanings. And the fact that he would, you know, there are far more conservatives in Hollywood, I believe, than we are aware of, but they keep that to themselves because they know of the ramifications of admitting such. And Arlie Ermey didn't give a shit about that. He was proud about who he was, and he didn't hide it from anybody. And I think that speaks volumes about his character, about he doesn't back down from what he believes. And I respect that a whole lot. As far as him as an actor goes, like I said, huge, huge part of, you know, my life in terms of what I love about pop culture, be it movies, The Frighteners, Full Metal Jacket, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Life, Seven, the list goes on and on. And the television, he was on The Simpsons, X-Files, Family Guy. I love all of those shows. I love all those movies, and then video games, Call of Duty, Fallout. I don't have one single thing to say bad about the man. And that is honest to God, the truth. There are actors that I love, but they've done things that I wasn't necessarily a fan of them in, or they have aspects of their personality or who they are as a person that I might have an issue with. I can't think of a single thing about Arlie Ermey that I didn't like. And that's me trying to find something maybe that I didn't like. And I can't think of a single thing. And, you know, I think that says a lot about him. And that's really all I have to say about Arlie. And I'm sad that he's gone, and I'm sad that I'll never have the opportunity to meet him. And I'm jealous of Jesse that he got to meet him 300 times. And I think we really lost somebody special there.
Absolutely. I definitely agree. And I'm upset and, you know, just pissed off that I didn't get to shake his hand too. I mean, for a multitude of reasons, but I mean, it is what it is. He didn't do a lot of horror conventions, but he did a lot of other appearances otherwise. But I just, the planets just weren't aligned properly for me to ever get a chance to have a drink with him or a handshake or just whatever. So, Jesse, final thoughts on his legacy as far as the big picture. I mean, obviously, he's been involved in so much shit and touched so many fans in a lot of different ways, whether it was through the military side or the horror genre side, but just final thoughts in general.
I hate to say this, but there's a lot of cookie cutter actors out there where you could literally just replace one with the other and it not make a huge difference. He is not one of those actors. He is probably, in my opinion, one of the most unique male actors that we have out there. When you see him in something, he's that role. You cannot replace him with someone else and it be the same role. Another thing that we didn't point out that I'll end with, do you guys remember that time that he played Bruce Campbell's dad in Briscoe County Jr.?
Oh, that's right.
I was going to bring that up, but I didn't think anybody else had ever seen that show. The guy, he worked with everybody, man. He had worked with at some point almost every single person in Hollywood, including Ash Williams.
Final thoughts for me. I mean, like I mentioned in the intro, as far as with TCM, with Full Metal Jacket, Saving Silverman, I mean, the list just goes on and on. I just have nothing but respect for the guy, and I wish I could have just had a simple handshake or drank a beer with him you know, like with a lot of other actors that appear at horror conventions or whatever, but it is what it is. I was definitely saddened to hear that he passed, especially from pneumonia. Not that pneumonia is not serious by any means, but like I mentioned before, you would have thought that maybe it was from an accident from filming or something like that, because the guy was just tough as nails. So either way, RIP to definitely a movie icon, and his legacy will obviously continue to live on. And he's just been in so many things, as we've mentioned, that the list just goes on and on. So other than that, I mean, he's definitely one of my favorite actors. I'm glad that I do have an autographed 8x10 of him from Full Metal Jacket, from the iconic scene where everybody's standing on their Foot Locker, the jelly donut scene. It's a black and white. He signed it in black Sharpie, and it'll definitely be in my collection as one of my top-notch pieces. So, but yeah, I mean, I guess that wraps up another episode of Death Curse Radio. So please rate and review wherever the hell you listen to the show at, and check us out on Facebook at Death Curse Radio, and obviously deathcurseradio.com. This episode was brought to you in memoriam of the late, great R. Lee Ermey. Until next time.
Evil lurks in the mind of a madman.
This is the end, friend.
Your suffering will be legendary, even in hell. From the prime time, bitch.
I am the devil, and I am here to do the devil's work.
Candyman.
Because I've seen enough horror movies to know any weirdo wearing a mask is never friendly.
That is what
I guess everyone's entitled to one good scare, huh?
Some things have a strange idea entertained.